At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
This is Marketplace After the Bell. I'm Scott Jagow, and I'm here to make sense of what happened this week in business and the economy. It's Friday, June 26th. This week, it seemed that America's great economic divide was screaming in our faces. After all we've been through recently, after all the talk about Wall Street and Main Street, the two seemed as far apart as ever. We learned that Goldman Sachs could post its best annual profit this year, and that perhaps that could lead to record bonuses at Goldman. There will be significant salary increases at Citigroup, which, unlike Goldman, is still on the government dole. But the news wasn't so good for people who work outside of Wall Street. We found out that many companies are cutting retirement benefits, or thinking about it at least. And for those who don't have jobs, unemployment assistance is starting to run out. One result of that, credit card defaults are piling up. Foreclosures are spilling over the subprime dam into other loan markets. And the people who have the least may get hit the hardest by cuts in state budgets. There will always be class tension in a capitalist economy, but it's a fair question to ask. Despite the government's heavier hand in the economy, why does it seem that class warfare is stronger than ever? Maybe it's just the sensitivity of a recession. But this week, it certainly didn't feel like there's been much progress in bridging the economic divide.
Marketplace, providing you what you need to know about business and economics on air and online. Explore everything Marketplace has to offer, from explainers on technical terms to stories on personal finance at marketplace.org.
Frankly, it's getting a little tiresome to talk about Wall Street compensation. But as we heard in last week's podcast, that might be the most important issue in preventing the careless risk-taking that caused the financial collapse. The big banks that have survived the crisis are starting to make money again, and they want to reward their people and keep them from going somewhere else. No one is doing better than Goldman Sachs. This week, the Guardian newspaper said Goldman's on track for its most profitable year ever, and it speculated about record bonuses. Here's what Goldman CEO Lloyd Blankfein said. He said the bank is obligated to ensure that compensation reflects the true performance of the firm and motivates proper behavior. Our New York bureau chief Amy Scott talked to analyst David Williams about why some banks are doing so well.
The real economy is obviously suffering. There is an awful lot of activity taking place in the financial marketplace.
With several investment banks either merged or out of business, there's also less competition these days. One bank taking a larger slice of the pie is Goldman Sachs. Goldman declined to comment today on that talk of record bonuses at the firm this year. Greg Larkin with Risk Metrics Group says Goldman was less involved in subprime than other banks, and the firm wants to hold on to top performers.
There are people that are good traders out there. There are talented bankers. There are talented financial analysts. And I think Goldman has a responsibility to be a place where those kinds of people want to work.
Now that banks are making piles of money again, some corporate governance advocates worry they'll forget about reforming the way bankers are paid. Bonuses are typically based on a single year's profits. Paul Hodgson tracks executive compensation at the Corporate Library. He says bonuses should reward long-term performance.
If firms had been thinking about long-term value growth rather than registering yet another year of record earnings, then undoubtedly I think the risks that were taken would not have been taken.
I've heard it said another way, long-term greed is better than short-term greed. Like Goldman Sachs, Citigroup was given a government money line through TARP. But that's where the similarities end. Citi is still tethered and struggling. It has to be at a competitive disadvantage with the Goldmans of Wall Street. This week, Citigroup said it would keep bonuses small but raise base salaries by as much as 50%. But is that a step in the right direction or the wrong one? Reporter Ashley Milne-Tight talked to compensation consultant Alan Johnson.
In Citibank's case in particular, I mean, they obviously have morale problems. They have issues of, you know, whether they can actually be paid at the end of the year.
He says removing uncertainty about compensation is more likely to keep Citi workers at their desks. Peter Cohen writes widely about banks. He says raising base pay and trimming bonuses will please some bankers but anger others.
If they're paying a bigger salary to somebody who's working in a part of the business that's losing money, it doesn't seem to me they should be getting a reward for that. It seems to me that they should be suffering along with the performance of the business.
Instead, bankers are guaranteed more base pay even if Citi does badly. That's the way Rich Filato sees it. He's with the American Federation of State, County and Municipal Employees, which holds 3% of Citi's stock. He says the traders and others who created Citi's problems are the winners here.
Before, they were overly rewarded for taking big risks. Now we're just going to reward them very generously. There needs to be a tie to performance and not a guarantee of the delivery of very large salaries.
While the banks have been debating how to reward their employees, many other companies are thinking they need to take benefits away because they need to cut costs. The 401k match is one of the benefits on the table. Steve Henn reported on that.
Close to a quarter of all companies in the U.S. are considering eliminating or cutting back the amount of money they kick into their employees' 401k programs. That's according to a new survey released today by Charles Schwab. Michael Sanfrock at Schwab says for most employers, cutting matching retirement benefits is a last resort.
What we are absolutely hearing is the vast majority are looking to reinstate that match as soon as they can.
Still, millions of workers have seen their retirement benefits slashed, and there's no guarantee they'll be reinstated. For those workers, this raises some unpleasant questions, like is retirement at 65 actually just a pipe dream?
I don't think the dream of retirement is dead, but it is becoming less of a reality for many people.
Christian Weller at the Center for American Progress says downturns often reveal ugly truths about 401k plans, even during the mild 2001 recession.
What we saw was that employers did cut back their matches to 401k plans in the last recession and never really fully restored them.
And if losing out on the company match isn't enough, over a lifetime, 401k fees can take a significant bite out of the nest egg. It's been estimated that workers have paid $2 trillion in fees. Congress is getting involved. Reporter Dan Gretsch talked to the congressman who wrote the bill, Democrat George Miller of California.
We've heard from people all over the country that these fees are not transparent, these fees are hidden, these fees are excessive, and that, in fact, you can reduce a lifetime savings of people who work for 20 or 30 years by almost 20%.
The bill rolls different fees into a single figure that would be displayed prominently in statements. Jeff Acheson is with Schneider Downs, a wealth management advisory firm. He says over a lifetime, a small fee can add up.
Dramatically, it adds up to tens of thousands of dollars in potential account value that could have been there to the younger or the larger contributor. It could easily be in six figures, the differential.
All I have to say is, take it away, Schoolhouse Rock.
If not for all these bills and taxes, our income would more than suffice. I feel like a real big cheese until everybody takes a slice. I don't want to bore you with my troubles or my woes. Still, you're old enough to know where the money goes.
This is Marketplace After the Bell for June 26th. I'm Scott Jagow. We still have this divide between Wall Street and Main Street, and it shows in the numbers. While the financial system reports bigger profits, the unemployment rolls continue to grow. For some people, unemployment benefits are starting to run out. And that's having another consequence, credit card defaults. Stacey Vanek-Smith talked to David Robertson of the Nilson Report.
When that paycheck goes away, decisions have to be made. Mortgages, car loans, etc. And the credit card bill is mostly the one that goes by first.
Credit card defaults have hit record highs. This year, the industry is expected to lose around $80 billion. Still, economist Greg McBride says credit card debt will not be the new mortgage debt.
The numbers are much, much smaller. And the implication of defaults on the broader economy, isn't something that really even belongs in the same conversation as what we've seen in the mortgage side.
We owe about $1 trillion on our cards. Compare that to the roughly $11 trillion we owe on our mortgages. But those numbers don't tell the whole story, says Robert Manning, founder of the Responsible Debt Relief Program. He says these days people are using their cards for rent and food. So when they start missing card payments, it's a sign they're slipping over the edge.
While the outstanding amount of credit card debt sounds very small compared to mortgage debt, it's going to expose all these other trillions of dollars in consumer debt that people may have to default on.
Manning expects a flood of personal bankruptcies this year.
Speaking of floods, to this point, foreclosures have mostly been contained in the subprime market. But now borrowers with good credit and what you might call plain old vanilla loans are going under. We had this report from Mitchell Hartman.
Patrick Newport is an economist with IHS Global Insight. He says all over America, people are losing jobs and income as the economy sputters. Homeowners with adjustable rate mortgages are stuck. They can't refinance because they owe more than their houses are worth.
We're going to see another wave of foreclosures on top of what we're seeing right now. And what it means is that the foreclosure problem is going to be with us for quite a while.
Newport says he's most worried about prime borrowers. As job losses mount, they're defaulting at a record pace. These are people who didn't do anything risky when they bought their houses. They got standard fixed-rate mortgages with reasonable interest rates and affordable monthly payments. They're people like Mark Remington. He owns a landscape design business in the small town of Valdez, North Carolina, but nobody's building these days, and he's hurting bad. He has to pay $1,800 a month to service his mortgage and home equity loan. He's had to dig deep into his savings, and he's running out of options.
What I've done is rather than not make the payment and just stick my head in the sand and run the other way, I've tried to make good faith payments of $500 a month towards the mortgage. And it doesn't matter what you have your mortgage at. If there's no work out there to pay your bills, it just becomes a non-issue.
On Hilton Head Island, 300 miles to the south, Jerry Prudhomme's well-heeled clients are heading down a similar path.
And we're seeing people who have been real estate investors as well as investors in equities for many, many years who have never missed a mortgage payment who now are missing their first mortgage payment. You know, we haven't seen the crest of the wave yet, but it is certainly on its way.
California has been one of the worst foreclosure states. And as I'm sure you're aware, the state has many other problems, starting with a huge budget deficit of $24 billion. The state is scrambling to cut programs. And as necessary as those cuts may be, eliminating government programs usually hits regular people the hardest. Teachers, for example. Reporter Rob Schmidt spent some time with a teacher's aide.
Inside the gate of Bird's tiny pink house, Miss Bird becomes Jacqueline Bird, an exhausted 50-year-old mother and aunt worried about how she's going to feed her family.
On my level, it means going to the food banks, asking your relatives for financial assistance.
Bird's brother and sisters are pitching in to send the girls to summer school. The school's run by the L.A. Roman Catholic Archdiocese, which quickly stepped in to fill L.A.'s summer school gap. The girls' tuition comes to $800. That's what Bird makes in a month, or what she did make, Last week, the district cut the literacy program she's worked for, making her the latest victim of the state's budget crisis.
The bulk of my job is no longer there. I will only be working officially 1 hour each day as a school supervision aide, and the rest of my time will be donated.
Before her hours were cut, Bird's salary, combined with her husband's Social Security, put her family just above the poverty line. Now they're below it. At least now, she says, they qualify for food stamps.
We're in an unraveling time of what we've become accustomed to.
Ramon Cortinas is superintendent of LA Unified Schools. For the past month, he's been in charge of making hundreds of millions of dollars worth of deeply painful cuts, laying off thousands of staff and teachers, cutting summer school, slashing programs that have never been cut before. Cortinas is a man who's run out of options.
I've looked at everything in the budget. There isn't an office that isn't touched. There isn't a program that I haven't looked at. And I've gone back the second time.
Back at Jacqueline Bird's home, her daughter washes dishes as Bird weighs her own options. She would like to start her own catering or tutoring business. She has experience doing both. But she admits in this economy, neither is likely to take off. Everyone she knows in this neighborhood is losing work.
All it takes is one thing to happen. One part-time job. One full-time job to be cut from 5 days a week to 4 days a week. That's all it takes.
It's true, a bad economy can be brutal on people with the least. But in other ways, a recession can be a great equalizer. This week, the company that ran the expedited security lines at airports shut down. Business travelers loved it. For $200 a year, you could get a background check and then speed through security faster than everyone else. Well, not anymore. The parent company of Clear Lanes is done. John Dimsdale talked to B'nai Wilson of Aviation Week.
They were supposed to have these scanners that would have allowed you to keep your shoes on, your coat on, and your laptops in the bag. But the Transportation Security Administration wasn't happy with the clear rates, no pun intended, on those scanners. And I think people felt at that point, well, this is kind of not what I signed up for.
Also, Clear was unable to move into some big airports like Chicago's O'Hare or Miami International. One reason many major airlines with their own bypass lines for premier customers lobbied against Clear. Paul Rudin at the American Society of Travel Agents says most travelers didn't think the service was worth $200 a year.
It was a nice, nifty idea, but, you know, it faced too many obstacles. It was too slow evolving to reach the critical mass that you have to have.
I guess that means there's still one place where everyone has the same standing. That's Marketplace After the Bell for this week. I'm Scott Jagow. I'll be back next Friday to make sense of what happened in business and the economy. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you next week.
In your car, you're losing. Sadly, you're cruising. I'm a jolly banker, jolly banker, am I? Get your car and your clothes, singing, I'm a jolly banker, am I?
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.